Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. History, of course, is very important to many of us, whether we're talking about the Malaysia Agreement 1963 or we're talking about the Trump family fortune. Of course, we all know where that started. The other issue, because for Malaysia, has to do with bogeys like May 13th or the unexplored relationship between Malaysia and the first failure, as it were, which is the separation of Singapore from the Federation. We have other issues, the NOC, we've had 22 years under Dr. Mahathir, and also the Reformasi movement. All of them, of course, are implicated in the study of history. Now, I have with me tonight three young people who are passionate about history. I have Natusha Naidu, I have Imran Rashid, and Jeremy Lim. They all started something called Imagine Malaysia. And it's not my imagination, but you're all here tonight, and I'm really excited because there's nothing better than having three passionate young people to talk to, except perhaps three passionate old people to talk to. But okay, we'll give you a couple of years to catch up with the rest of us. Many terms in this really ambitious project. But before we get to the project, I really want to ask you, why history? Imran, tell us, a little bit about yourself and how you got to this whole thing about history, your love affair for history.
Right. First of all, thank you very much for inviting all of us to be here. My love for history is a bit kind of different in the sense that it's my projection towards the future that caught me back into the past. So when I was at school, like any other students, I guess, I'm sure my colleague would actually say the same thing, that we got frustrated with the kind of histories that we've learned from schools. And from those kind of frustration, I'm always wondering what are the kind of future we can have? What are the kind of political activities that one can do? The imaginations of what is possible.
And when do you start studying history in school? Natusha, when do kids start learning history? For me, it was standard four is when we started learning history. What about your generation?
That's funny because I think I only started at Form 1.
Form 1,
so it's a much later introduction in history.
And did you have the similar kind of experience as Imran did? Troubled? You didn't know why you were studying this?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe because we come from different schooling backgrounds. Like, Imran went to a boarding school. I went to a typical government school. And, it was more like something you were taught because it was not that significant for your exam. So it's treated like, just memorize it. Don't think so much about it.
Memorization of dates and names and places, right, and events. Now, Jeremy, what brought you to history?
I was a bit of a latecomer to history. I don't think I felt the same kind of frustration that Imran felt. I think a bit more of a careerist in my younger days. I just was looking to just get a good paying job and all that. I came a bit later to sort of the political sort of scene through books. Oddly enough, focused on the US, but that was my entry point into the social sciences. By my undergraduate days, I was done with engineering. I wanted to move on to something else. So from there, I started looking at, the politics, the way history was framed in the US, that sort of guided the trajectory of particular movements.
Okay. Well, you're a research associate at the Jeffrey Sachs Center with Sunway University. So you've done your first degree and you're now kind of in research, at least, not necessarily historical research. And Natusha, you're an undergraduate. So that's even more impressive at Nottingham University, Malaysia. And Imran, you're actually pursuing an MA in history at University of Malaya. Tell us, what is it that you're looking at? I mean, now that you've kind of determined to correct the wrongs of the past and or at least its representations. What is it that you're studying at University of Malaya?
Well, my thesis is a bit boring, to be honest, because it's actually on economic history where it looks at the formations of colonial capitalism in East Java during the cultivation system, which is about 1830s and 1870s. But of course, despite all the boringness of that particular topic, I think it's quite important, especially to consider the economic formation that actually later on developed the whole social and class formations within Java itself.
So what do you say is boring? Because it sounds fascinating. It sounds like the most important histories that have been written in the 20th century about the past are, in fact, economic histories.
Yes. Well, generally, economic histories have always been portrayed as something's quite boring.
But again, well, history as a whole is portraying something quite boring.
Hey, that's not true, okay?
okay, go on.
Well, but again, what I think, why people think it's boring is because when we talk about economics, it's always numbers. But we fail to comprehend that economics and other spheres of lives are connected. That's why I think once you're able to realize the kind of connection with what you eat this particular morning, actually connected with the whole economic relations of the society, I think that's where the interesting bits that I think is missing in our education system.
Okay, so you're studying Indonesia from the 19th century, right? So the 19th century study. Natusha, you're at university. Are you studying history history components in your study?
Yeah, I do, because I study international relations. So, and my university's Department of Politics, History and International Relations. So there's a lot of emphasis on history and Southeast Asian history in particular. So I think, and especially if you do political science, you can't run away from history. So that's
one reason, the politics of today will become history. I mean, it soon passes into that,
exactly.
Right? Jeremy, is your current work at all involved in doing historical research? Is there a value placed on that, do you think?
Not really. I do this history thing kind of on the side. Because my background is in mechanical engineering. This is really off tangent.
But as a research associate, are you looking at engineering?
Yeah. This year we worked on national energy policy, but in my spare time, you know, I studied the Russian Revolution.
Yeah. Okay, in your spare time, the Russian Revolution. It lasted about, 70 years, did it?
Maybe a little bit more.
A little bit more, okay. Yeah. Imran, tell us, how did you guys get together? Because clearly you're sort of different points in your scholastic trajectories, but you all seem to be very passionate about putting something together collectively.
Well, it started off with me and Natusha. We met at Idea Raya, then we started to discuss about our frustrations of history. And
what's Idea Raya?
Idea Raya is basically this festival of ideas. I think it's 3 years ago that they have it in Shah Alam, where they put together all kind of intellectual activities, poetry, creative writings and all those things, put together in one particular public spaces and being celebrated in a public gatherings of some sort. So we met there. I mean, that's the first time I met Natusha. And then from that particular meeting, we share the same frustration, the same passions for our favorite historians, obviously, Farish Noor. And then from there, we kind of like...
Is there only one favorite historian?
There's more, then it's going to take more of our time. But from there, I guess we'll come up with this idea of starting a project to promote historical discourses in our public spaces as well.
Okay, Natusha, if there's one man who's made history sexy, it is Farish Noor. I think nobody can take that away from him. But the question is why? Why did he become an intellectual inspiration for you or a mentor, even if it's just through his books?
I think for me, it was because he made it more accessible. And the problem with the way history is being told, it's very factual and dry. He tells it like a story. And through the NX lectures that he did and the book, What Your Teacher Didn't Tell You, history was being told in a way that was very personal and intimate, even though we did not exist at that period to witness these events. But he made it feel that this event affected you and your life and the political spaces that you have today. And I think that's what's lacking in generally telling history, that, you know, we have to tell it like it's a story and that's placed within a wider social context.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we'll come back to that. There is a dimension. Jeremy, did you catch the annex lectures by Farish Noor?
No, I
didn't. You didn't? You went for? Did you get to watch them?
No, I mean, we were very young back in the day.
Oh, we're all very
young, in fact. Yeah.
Okay, the one thing I must say, and it must be said, is the level of a performance that Farish brought to it. It wasn't giving a dry lecture. He did, in fact, make it super interesting because he himself embodied the passion that he brought to it. You were going to jump in at that point.
Because I just want to say about how not just Farish, but many other historians, many other interesting historians, what they try to bring into the table is the importance of imagination itself in looking back into the past. While we look at our history, I mean, historical educations in our school system, it's always about numbers and figures and names. But I think what's more important is to be able to imagine what is it like to be in those era? What kind of questions would you like to ask? As a human beings, those are the things that I think it's missing. And because history, despite being in a distant past, is always relatable. And those kind of relatable, the kind of connection with the past that I think it's missing, an intimacy in our understanding of history.
What about since I know it's a bit of sacrilege to bring in names of other historians when we've already invoked the name of Farish Noor, but there are other historians that you have read that really excite you, Jeremy?
And friends will know this. I really like this Indian historian, Vijay Prashad. He wrote books like The Poorer Nations, The Darker Nations. He tried to recapture the sort of what it was like to live in the third world. Malaysia might be a bit more distant from this, but in places like Indonesia, in Yugoslavia, in India. So these were places where third world nationalism as an alternative to communism and capitalism genuinely seemed like something possible for the world, something that would stand opposed to these kind of hegemonic imperial kind of forces.
Ooh, okay, big words coming our way. Okay, Natusha, very quickly, other sources of inspiration for you?
I think for me, a huge inspiration was Benedict Anderson. He's actually a political scientist in training, but I feel that the way he theorized a lot stemmed from history. So he, especially the book Imagined Communities, had left a very huge impression on me, because the idea of a nation state being very solid, legitimate, and basically uncontested was suddenly like shackled. And I felt that there's this lack of contestation that goes on in our discussions about, you know, who are the victors of history, who gets to write the official history. And he brought this discussion into place, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Benedict Anderson's book is one of the most cited books of the 20th century. We're going to come back with your thoughts of other historians after this. I'm speaking to Imran Rashid, Natusha Naidu and Jeremy Lim. They're all young historians in the making. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. I'm talking to three young people, Natusha Naidu, Jeremy Lim, and Imran Rashid. They're all involved in an adventure, not an adventure, but an adventure called Imagined Malaysia. We ended up without asking you for a historian other than Farish Noor that has inspired you. Imran, who would you rate as the top historian after Farish?
Well, one is Howard Zinn, from the one that wrote The People's History of the United States. I think the way he approached history is not just at the level of facts and figures, but at the level of motives as well. The stories must be dedicated to address a certain moral concerns as well, which I think inspires me a little bit as well.
Okay, so we're going to get to this idea that you do invoke as activist historian, but that's something for later on. I still want to understand why history is fun. And part of it, I think you've already answered by saying it's about stories. And everybody loves a story, right? We go to Netflix and we go to popular culture to listen to stories. But there's something different about the way historians tell stories. And Jeremy, what's your sense of why a story that's, say, based on a comic character might be different from, you know, a history that's written?
I think it because it bears so much influence on our lives today. I
mean, and comics don't.
Well, in a very different way, because the way we look at history will shape the way politics takes place, how identities are formed. You know, identities are so much hinged on history, and we see that kind of nostalgia for kind of history. So I think the way history is written is important. But for me, I mean, to go back to the sort of idea you brought up earlier for maybe why history is fun, I think that sense of discovery is still sort of unfolding for those of us who are interested in any particular kind of area. So that sense of discovery is still something that, you know, excites me.
Is that you too as well, Imran? The discovery, what you're discovering about Java in the 19th century?
I, for one, doesn't believe that history should be fun. I mean, there should be some level of improvements in the way how history should be taught in Malaysia, definitely. But then,
and it shouldn't involve making it entertaining.
Yeah, but yeah, the essence of history doesn't have to be fun. But what I think is more important is how relatable it is, and it has the same structures as the comics. Because again, when you read a comic, if it's too alien to you, you can't relate to the characters. Then it won't be fun anymore, or it won't be as entertaining anymore, if you like. But history is the same, because the moment we ask the right questions when we look at the past, it's become relatable. And that's where you can actually connect to history and connect to our past. That's, I think, it's what it doesn't have to be fun in a sense that, you know, like you have like all this conflict. History is a lot of conflicts and drama. Definitely, you have evils or whatever, everything merged together into one plot.
Okay, so maybe the word fun is an inappropriate one. Natusha, I mean, for you as a budding historian, right, somebody who aspires to, and you said it on your Twitter feed, and I read you sometimes, and you talk about wanting to become a historian. Is there a pleasure principle in it? Is there something in it that attracts you at a deeper level, if you want to make fun a much more profound notion than just, you know?
Yeah, because... I mean, I actually disagree with Imran, because I have a passion for teaching generally. My mom's a teacher, and you know, she teaches like small kids, like 7 to 8, and I think I also learned to appreciate that, and I feel that history doesn't have to be told in a very traditional way, and it's time for us to develop, and you know, we have so much technology and innovative things, like, you know, there's such thing as design thinking now, and I think that we should be applying it more to historical education. And when I was in the States for like a fellowship that I did, and we learned that we could actually tell history not just by reading books or giving lectures, but also role-playing, for instance, or playing games, you know, coming up with game systems and things like that. So, you know, this is the new languages that we speak now. And, you know, when it comes to really important discussions, like especially discourses on history and politics, I think it should follow through, you know.
Okay, but what about the way in which history often becomes a foundation, say, for literature, or becomes used in popular culture, right? You have a lot of movies, for instance, Jeremy. I mean, do you think that is a good thing for history? Could it be an entry point for young people wanting to get into history and history research?
I mean, a lot of us in our younger days, if we took part in popular culture, watched TV, played video games, that these were fantastic entry points, you know, like video games like the Assassin's Creed series. You go to a different civilization for every game. That's like a very interesting entry point for any young person who has no idea about history. You meet historical characters in these video games and all that. So,
but it's not so much costuming, right? So there is a way in which history becomes rendered as costumes. And we've had controversies over the way in which historical costumes get used, and what gets written out is the typical dark side of those histories, like, you know, the clothing line, you know, that invoked colonial India, for instance.
Right.
How do you see, where do we need to go as popular culture versus kind of history of the sort that you're doing?
Well, I think, hence why I think it's quite important for us to recognize, one, I think, is that while at the level of pedagogy, like, you know, the kind of presentation of histories in the movies or in classrooms or whatever, it should be entertaining. We can try to make it as entertaining as possible. But what's more important really is to ask the right questions, because if you don't ask the right questions and how we connect ourselves in the present day to the past, then however presentable that is, it's going to be the wrong message that you're sending. And I think it should be right. I think once we adopted the right attitudes, one is that history is not something that one can harmonize and try to kind of come up with this good storytelling. It's messy. It's always messy. And that kind of open-endedness when we approach our past, I think, is important, because if we tend to use and instrumentalize our histories, be it for politics, be it for our own entertainment, it won't deliver the right message.
Okay, so this instrumentalization issue is going to come up later when we talk about the so-called activist historian. But Natusha, just to kind of round up the question of fun and history, I mean, is there a balance for you between the pleasure of discovery and the hard slog? I mean, a lot of historians spend time in archives, not particularly fun environments necessarily.
Yeah, I actually do agree that there is a certain balance, and some people do have like roles that they want to play. And of course, yeah, I mean, it goes back to wanting to move on to the next topic, which is about activist historian, and you know, where do you draw that balance between like your advocacy and making it sexy, fashionable, and also at the same time making sure the nuances and complexities are addressed. But I think, you know, it takes a certain amount of maturity and as well as honesty, sincerity in the work that you do in order to bring that balance there. And identifying who are you trying to speak to and who are you speaking on the behalf of.
Okay, and we're going to pick up all those questions later on in the specifics of your project. The project is called Imagined Malaysia. It's now on a WordPress blog, but it's going to become a magazine, I believe, and they're going to tell us more about it. Natusha Naidu, Jeremy Lim and Imran Rashid with me tonight on Let's Talk With Me, Sharad Kutin. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. I'm with Imran Rashid, Jeremy Lim and Natusha Naidu. They're all involved with five others, I think it's a group of eight people, all of whom are at home now cheering away as they watch their comrades, I say comrades pointedly, work the television magic. They're trying to persuade you that history is very important. Now, tell us about Imagine Malaysia, because that's the reason I brought you here. You were doing some fundraising on social media, and I thought, oh, let's bring you on to have a discussion about why this project is important. Natusha.
Well, so Imagine Malaysia, as I mentioned earlier, about Benedict Anderson and the book Imagined Community. So that's where we got the inspiration for the name, Imagined
Malaysia.
Okay,
it's Malaysia. Chip so you just kind of like borrowed a term. Never mind.
Chip off the old block.
Standing on the shoulders of giants. Okay, very good.
So, because the idea is that we wanted to show that, you know, because Malaysians are generally kind of indoctrinated with this idea of, like, okay. I know it's a strong word, but
speak
that's
for
how
yourself.
I But, you know, basically, like, this idea of, like, that we have a very, like, our history is divided along ethnic lines and not so much about class or power relations or things like that.
And you're talking about the histories that are presented to us through official media or through school.
Yes.
Not necessarily the histories that have been written, because there have been all kinds of histories, including ones that look at questions of class, right?
Yeah, especially like in terms of the textbook history. So I feel that when Iman and I first decided on starting this project, of which is actually not just like inspired by Benedict Anderson, but also, again, Farish knows, a project called The Other Malaysia. And we felt that what he had done, it was something that we, our generation didn't get to experience, which is like an outright contestation and challenge to status quo history.
So there's a kind of political motive behind it. Imran, the question is, you know, you are all just starting out. Many of your members are people who are undergraduates or even before. They're not even undergraduates yet, right? So is this really about amateur history? Are you asking young people and your members to actually go and write histories, do research? Is that what this whole thing is about?
Well, at this point in time, I think we don't really have any research program. But what we wanted to have is to have that kind of discussions in public. So we as a members of Imagine Malaysia, we work together to come up with events that actually create and spark that interest in among our peers and, of course, the later generations as well. That's why when we started Imagine Malaysia, the first events that we did, apart from small reading groups that we organised in universities and other places, is a series of lectures. The first one that we have, in fact, was on the May 13th, where we invited Kua Kiat Siong to revisit back that particular episode of Malaysian history beyond the official narrative, of course.
So Kua Kiat Siong is a sociologist. He's written a book, I believe, Class and Communism in Malaya is his. He's also, I think, a director of Suaram, the human rights organization. Okay, I'm also thinking of Fahmi Reza. Fahmi Reza, because did a lot of history, a lot of excavation of history to present the stories of, say, the student movement. Jeremy, is that also an inspiration, the work that someone like Fahmi did?
I personally came a bit later to Fahmi, but it's a bit like that. I did my own reading. It was not part of my official work. I was doing it while still studying my engineering degree. But it was an interest that continued to, you know, fuel a passion for discovering the political narratives that were sort of hidden away, you know. So
I guess it is in that.
Talking about hidden away, I mean, Imran, you know, how much is really hidden? Because there are people like the Fahmi Rezas of the world, or Jomo in his kind of class rendering of Malayan history, and so on. They've all been doing kind of, you might say, non-dominant histories, but they've been doing stuff that you say is missing from the textbooks.
I think it's one is they are missing in our textbooks. That's one, of course. But they are, like you said, produce a lot of amazing works. Fahmi Reza, Jomo, everyone else, I think there's a lot of like a batch of historians actually who work on this particular interesting issues. But the discourse that they have, the kind of arguments that they articulated, doesn't really come across to the generations that, our generations at least, because it's not being discussed anywhere. It's not in the universities. It's not
so it's about popularizing the history then.
For example, okay, there are so many popular historians, like, I mean, in the academic sphere, like, Baba Watson Andaya and Leonard Andaya, for instance. But you would only know them if you are reading history in a very like academic sense, if you're really invested in it. Or like Paul Kratoska, you know, these are really famous people who studied Malaysian history. But, you know, so the whole idea was we wanted those kind of discourses to be beyond the confines of academic institutions, that you could learn more about these things through readings and through, by inviting these people for free public lectures. You know?
Okay, so what about, and I'm just, the question that I'm throwing up here is just like, if somebody's watching and listening to all of you, they say, well, what about getting my parents to write their memoirs? Would that constitute a history, Jeremy? And would that be important to do? Is that something that also could, in fact, help historians in the future?
I think it would. I think the way people write this history, I think some of us here may have different opinions on that. I've been known to have no particular nostalgia for every type of history. I'm a bit more biased in some
ways. What is your preference then?
Political economy is generally in that direction. But I do think it is important insofar that it, you know, tries to show what daily life would be for some of these people, something that's generally missing and would be great source material for you to write if, let's say, you wanted to write a history of the whole of Malaysia. There's a really interesting way to sort of package those memoirs and sort of write the history of this class of people or this ethnic group, how they experienced going to the bank, you know, shopping.
Because social histories.
Sorry, I mean, it's true. I mean, this dimensions of people's history, I think, is that the very at the very themes that we're trying to kind of like put forward as well. For example, during the Kwa Kia Soon first lectures of Imagine Malaysia, in fact, we did lectures on May 13. Despite the academic bits of it presented by Kwa Kia Soon, it's a gatherings of people who are their grandparents have their own stories of May 13 as well. So we have kind of a discussions afterwards about their own experiences, their own stories of May 13. What kind of anecdotes that they have, sharing them together. That's how I think our motto is always try to put together people to make history. It's not so much historians who make history, but it's among us.
I totally agree. For example, we had a forum on labour history in Malaya, and on the panel was K.S. Jomo and an independent researcher named Saminathan Muniswamy. And, you know, it was such an important, like, episode for, at least for me, because, you know, of my heritage and my ancestry as well. Like, my father came from the estates and, you know, he grew up there. And I feel that, you know, by just organising these events itself, we are creating spaces for people to come and reveal and share their stories and, you know, basically contest the intimacy of these stories and they're not being translated often than
not. We're going to have to translate some of the language using like contestation. That's not an easily understood notion, but we have next segment, we talk about how historians can get into trouble. Yes, trouble. Let's talk with me, Sharad Kutin.
Kita tolong. Sir, kejap. Itu pusingan apa ni? Tak boleh. Okey.
Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. That little snippet was from a forum in August, looking back at Malaysian history textbooks, something that, in fact, could be a source of some contestation in the new Malaysia. Maybe we need to rewrite our histories. Tell us about that forum, Imran. What was the context of that forum? What happened before it, and what was it that you were trying to do there?
So the forum was actually part of a series of events that we organized as part of that Malaysian, it's a people's issue on the Malaysian Emergencies Festival. So it's to revisit back the particular episodes, to look at the various moments in our histories that are connected to those particular struggles. And among those are the forums about Malaysian history textbooks. So it's on the last day, and what happened is that it also coincides with, there's a big rally in, I think, in PJ, yeah, in KL somewhere.
Kampung Baru.
Himpunan Kebangkitan Umar. That's actually a, like, you know, spirited, Malay spirited rhetorics are being delivered and in the rally. So what happened is that the night before the forums, the forum is basically about the textbook. It's how it's being advertised. But the night before the forum, there's a fake news thing going on where there's edited posters being circulated around, being shared for about 2K. There's a 2K shares on Facebook saying it's a forum about recognizing communism in Malaya. So it stirs a lot of anger among the citizens of social media. So they decided to just came
they,
that morning.
They wanted to disrupt the forum.
And okay. Say something.
Not too sure. Tell me. I have this impression that the people who want to rewrite history are often from the political left. Is that true?
No, I don't think so. Like, my first exposure of alternative history came from someone who identifies with the centre-right, as in someone that I knew, and... am I allowed to mention? But I mean, like... I mean, people know that Tunku Abidin Mufis, like, writes a column on... he used to write for the Malay Mail before moving to the Star, I think. And, you know, a lot of times he talks about countering the way we understand an UMNO-centric history with, you know... the history of monarchs and their political interventions or rhetorics and things like that.
So many people from different and divergent points in the political spectrum might contest the dominant history, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, what else do you think, Jeremy, came out of that forum? You were there, were you?
Yes,
and,
I was.
And what is it that you wanted to do? Was it to come to some conclusion about where history textbooks ought to go?
I think we were just trying to raise questions and... I mean, just to dive off that question. After the forum, the hecklers approached Imran and talked about how, and during the forum itself, they were talking about how they wanted to present their side of history. They wanted to talk to the veterans. Yeah. I mean, present the history of the veterans who fought the communists, a sort of, you know, alternative history in that sense. So I think back to your point about, you know, the question of the spectrum, I think the right, if you want to call them part of the right wing, you know, are looking to kind of revive that kind of patriotism by revisiting, you know, what it was like for veterans to fight the communists and all that, to paint a history in that light.
Right. Imran, do you think the charge that it's often the left that needs or feels the desire to rewrite history is coming essentially from the left?
Well, I mean, the term people's issues are often associated with the left. But again, I think it's not that healthy to monopolize a particular term to say that it is leftist tradition to say that we are organizing or putting forward people's history. Like Jeremy said, in fact, it's true that the right wing or whoever they are from the political spectrums, there are some renewed interest in revisiting back our past. And all of them wanted to kind of like change their histories or change the way the official narratives are being told now.
Okay, so we had the broad criticism of official narratives, dominant narratives, you know, citing one, not, you know, forgetting others. But could you give us some specifics? Are there details? What exactly would be rewritten in a history book if, say, Natusha, I gave you the contract to write the new history books, what would you change?
I definitely would not conflate communism with the Chinese community.
Okay, you think that happens?
Yeah, it's really too blatant in the history textbook for government schools. Like when I was in, I think it was my Form 5 and I was sitting for SPM and I was just like studying and I was like, how could they write this? It's so racist, you know? Like, Because you're just like stereotyping that, oh, you know, we should be worried that the Chinese community would be inclined to communism and whatnot because, you know, only they are capable of it.
Okay, Jeremy, another, give us an example of a history that needs to be rewritten.
I think I'll just borrow from what Fahmy said at that forum because what he did for his presentation was he just took a bunch of pictures of the Form 3 Sejarah textbook, if I'm not wrong, and highlighted the number of pages that showed UMNO as the party that was driving the independence struggle and the amount of space that was given to kind of left-wing movements like the Putra AMCJA and the KMM. So these were left-wing anti-colonial movements that also played a part in pushing forward, you know, our independence struggle, but they're getting so little coverage.
Okay, so that's Fahmy Reza's presentation, yeah. Right? Okay, Imran, something specific, tell us.
Well, it's not so much a thing at the level.
If I made you Minister of Education tomorrow,
yeah. Well, I'll change the way we tested our students on how they approach history, because again, our textbook, it's become the Bible. That's what it sees. It's the right things. That's the right facts. That's how you should believe it. But again, what Fahmy did raise in the discussion as well is how, first of all, the process of writing that particular textbook, who was involved? It should be transparent, one. Second, I think, I mean, where everyone from any kind of spectrum should be involved. Second, I think, and it's quite important as well, is that let the student decide. Let the student have the debates on discussing which perspectives are better or which perspective actually resemble the truth. Again, we don't really give that kind of space to the students because we think the students are dumb enough.
Is it about students being dumb, or is it a question of whether the students have the wherewithal to make those assessments, especially at a young age? I mean, do you think young people can engage in those debates, Natusha?
Yeah, of course, definitely, because I did at that age. And, you know, it's because we have this very paternal kind of approach to the education system. It's like, do not question. You know, you have a very father figure, like, authority, which is the teacher, and, like, you know, yeah. So, and
or the anchor of a show, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
Very fatherly, I know. I can't.
No, I mean, but seriously, like, you know, it does stifle, like, intellectual development and the ability to be critical because you're not allowed to ask questions. And it has to start with being allowed to ask questions in order to be critical. So,
Jeremy, do you think that your own disposition, you seem to be a critical person, both of them seem to be very critical. I don't know why they are, and I'm very interested to know why they are. I mean, where did that come from? You all went through the same schooling system, the one that you criticise for pushing a dominant narrative. You're saying that people are indoctrinated. Why aren't you indoctrinated?
I mean, you know, not to use too millennial term, but, you know, these days people get woke. That people like to say that. I don't know why.
So being conscientized, is that what woke means? Okay.
I mean, because I think every one of us has different kind of entry points into discovering what's behind the veil of power. The idea that, you know, the winners write history. And when you realize there's a different history behind that, it kind of breaks the illusion that, you know, this is how the world has been. It's nice and neat. You know, these ethnic groups do this, and this is why, you know, it problematizes the whole picture and it forces you to really question, you know, your place in it.
Imran, I'm going to use a millennial term on you. When did you get woked? Is that my grammar, my syntax right? Were you woked and why?
Well, I mean, one thing's for sure, it's not within my school period. I think all of us share the same experiences where it is when we went outside and then we are exposed to forums and discussion on the public spaces that we kind of like ask that particular questions, like whether the things that we've learned at school is actually the right history. So that's I think the term woke, I guess, applies to me in that sense. When I was doing my A-levels, I think A-level exams, history exam, I think even though it could be a guidance in a sense, because it provides that space for me to think, what are the right evidence for this? Because we have a sections where we evaluate the evidences.
Okay. So we're going to come back to the future of history and the question of being woke. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with Misha Rajputin. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. My guests, Imran Rashid and Tusha Naidu and Jeremy Lim, and we're talking about history. They have a project called Imagine Malaysia. Just now, they had 8 members. Now they have 10, apparently. They're growing exponentially, I'm told. Okay. How do you join? Is this a group that people can join? I mean, is there a page on Facebook that can sign up?
We started this volunteer database, so anyone can go to our Facebook page and sign up on a Google form. And basically, we would like more people to get involved in like organizing our activities, participating in our workshops and reading groups and things like that. And by being a member on Patreon, our Patreon page, which you can access by www.imagined.my, you'll be able to be even more involved in our community by getting to know the creative process that takes place and also having a say in like the kind of content that we are creating.
Okay, Iman, are there criteria for joining? And do you have to have a PhD? Not, because none of you have one yet. What exactly do you need to have to join this group or be accepted warmly as a member of the group?
Well, as the name goes, I guess you need to have a creative imagination of what history is, I guess. Well, that's a vague term, I guess, just to use it loosely. But the spirit of that particular group is always about trying to create and open the discussions as wide as possible. There's no limit to what kind of discussion that can take place in our historical discourses. So if you have an open-minded personality, you are critical of what's happening in the past, and you don't like this rigid, exclusive version of issues being told by the official narrative, you are more than welcome to
join. Oh, the bad official narrative. Like, we should have like a visual for the official narrative. I think it's an old and sort of disheveled-looking man. Jeremy, you know, what about the question of reading? Now, a lot of people like to talk. Everybody's got their own opinions, right? But, you know, maybe talk is cheap when it comes to history. How much importance do you place on actually reading histories and you know, the substantial tomes that are often produced by historians?
I mean, I'm a bit of a nerd, so I do enjoy that kind of
reading.
Are you
a nerd if you just admit that this is on national television?
I'm okay with that. But I do think it's important because we do have members from all sorts of other backgrounds. People who are passionate about film, who are passionate about graphic design. So we are looking to sort of present our history in all sorts of different ways.
But do you want them come having read something? I mean, do you think that whatever it is that their individual talents are, they themselves have to do the hard work, the heavy lifting, intellectually speaking, by reading the kind of histories that are being produced in, you know, throughout the world, whether through in universities or otherwise?
I'd have to disagree insofar as that, you know, people can get all sorts of stuff on YouTube. And for me, I think that's the best way I consume a lot of content. And so I think as long as you're somebody who's, you know, passionate about history, in whatever medium you consume it, well, I think we're quite ambivalent towards, you know, pop history. But, yeah, we'd prefer people who are a bit more critical on that side.
Well, I think it's a different level of engagement, I guess. If you wanted to be a historian, definitely you can't run away from reading. Reading boring.
You mean YouTube's not good enough?
YouTube is not good enough, definitely, because you have to look at the primary sources. But if you are wanted to in the middle sense, to be woke in historical senses, you don't have necessarily to read a thick 800 pages book. Might as well go to our events and then start reading journals, start reading articles, and then from there, if you want to probe further, there's always books and other means that we provide, in fact, and suggested in our talks and discussions. And in fact, I think in the questions of reading as well, we have this program that we are planning to do as well in the near future, that is to create a sort of academy of People's History Academy, where those people who are interested in studying history generally, but people's history, can get involved in that particular programs. We have mentors who are from all over, scholarships.
Are you duplicating things? And Natusha, I know there's another project in town, also a People's History Center, mm-hmm. right? Led by Juliet Chin and Dr. Po Soo Kai. Mm-hmm. Is it just one of the same?
I think our target is more like a younger crowd. So currently we are doing like a pilot project, which is an introduction to Southeast Asian history. And we're doing it with 20 school children. So their age range is between 14 to 18. And basically, they'll be engaging with like serious academic work, and you know they were really enthusiastic when I asked them. We did a survey first, and you know, do you want to like do something a bit more lightweight, maybe more videos and movies? They're like, no, I want to read the books. I want to read the journal articles. And this was a 15-year-old boy, and I was like, okay, it's like I'll do it, and then you know, like we'll have like a maybe a graduate level seminar. So I was really surprised because you know these are kids who came from government schools. And, you know...
where they're indoctrinated.
Yes, exactly. So.
Okay, Jeremy, I know that because your projects and projects like this need support. And you know, that's one of the reasons I really wanted you here, because I do want to give you guys a chance to make that appeal. What do you need to keep something like Imagine Malaysia going?
I think, well, I mean...
Don't be sheepish. Spit it out.
They're hinting at me that we need money, but you know, beyond money, I think we are looking for, you know, passionate individuals who can collaborate with us on all sorts of different things.
Okay, we know about the passionate individuals. How much does it cost to run a project like this and to keep it sustainable?
Well, to have an actual numbers is quite. Well, I can't.
You don't
really
have an accountant in your ranks, is it?
We have an accountant. We have a certain expenses that we put in check. But of course, I mean, like it or not, in any NGO circles, to organize forums, to be able to invite people, the right people to speak about interesting stuff, that requires some level of financial resources. And of course, none of us are being paid, definitely. We are doing this out of
labor,
out of love, basically. But of course, our love alone doesn't really pay the check, I mean, pay the resources. So we need money, and it's obviously for, I mean, we have a magazine, for example, that we are planning to release soon in January.
Okay, so it's not had its first edition yet.
This one is going to be the first editions, and the printing costs, of course, the designers and everything. It requires money, and that's where I think some fundings of some sort. I think.
Now, Tisha, why do you want to chop down trees? Why do you want to chop down trees and have a printed magazine? Why not keep it all online? After all, you're reaching out to millennials.
I think the idea is like to. It's not like in a large volume anyway, but yeah.
So just be a small forest rather than a large one. I'm being facetious, of course. Okay, your last thoughts on the importance of history. What are you reading that, you know, you want to share with everybody, Jeremy?
Okay, I read in very niche areas, so, you know.
No apologies, just go on, tell us.
I think I'm reading a book about the origins of capitalism by a Canadian historian. And I generally read in political economy. This is something that, you know, I plan to do for the rest of my life.
Probably. Oh, don't know. Apologize. The fact that you want to stop evolving is not our problem. Natusha, a book to recommend.
I think, like, the best introductory book is definitely What Your Teacher Didn't Tell You. That is a must-read for all Malaysians.
By Farish Noor. Yeah. Okay. And Imran, finally, a book that you'd recommend. Just one.
The book that I'm reading at the moment is by Anthony Milner, The Inventions of the Politics in Colonial Malaya. It's quite an important book to look at the kind of transitions of political practices and discourses in the pre-colonial period towards the colonial periods and, of course, towards the independence period as well. So I think it's important for us to know that our political tropes today is not always like this. It's evolved from certain places. And it can go to some other places. Ah,
okay. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Imran Rashid. He's a MA student at University of Malaya. Natusha Naidu, who is an undergraduate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. And Jeremy Lim, who's a research associate at the Jeffrey Sachs School, or rather, Jeffrey Sachs Centre at Sunway University. They've been very kind joining me this evening to talk about the question of history. Now, I'm here every night at 10 p.m. So keep watching. Let's talk with me, Sharad Kutan.